protected against by the post-conviction remedy. And that, in fact, is the purpose of the post-conviction remedy in those circumstances.
In the case of a person who is committed to the jurisdiction of the board...
Who is?
Is. Where does an issue like restitution fit in the schemata you just laid out? Is that directly, can that be asserted by direct appeal before the board's disposition of that case?
I think so, Mr. Chairman. My initial desire in working with these sections was to present one-stop appeals of sentences. And it seemed to me that the best place to do that was at the parole board set. My thought was that you could add language to Section 23 that made it clear that upon appeal from the parole board set date, the defendant could challenge any aspect of his sentence at that time. And the problem with that, and the reason that I'm backing off of that suggestion, is, as counsel points out, that doesn't address the problem of what happens to somebody who is not put within the jurisdiction of the parole board. If the court is going to consider restitution issues for some of the defendants on direct appeal, there's no reason to bifurcate it and provide different procedures for different categories of defendants. And so I think that under the scheme that I've just laid out, restitution issues would be raisable on direct appeal. But the question of restitution is whether restitution is appropriate as a matter of law in that kind of case, and not whether it was a wise sentencing decision to impose restitution. And under the formula that I'm proposing, there just wouldn't be review of whether the judge, as a matter of policy and sentencing policy, should have imposed restitution on this defendant. The issues would be things like whether the amount was appropriate, whether the kind of injury that is being compensated for in restitution is the kind that the statutes address, whether the defendant, there's an adequate showing of the defendant's ability or prospective ability to pay, and those sorts of issues that the court addresses now on direct appeal.
Let me see if I can sum up an approach and get the committee's reaction to a final set of amendments. Dave, do you want to come up also? First of all, in the case of the person who is committed to the jurisdiction of the division, the board, we will, regardless of the plea, we would provide that a direct appeal may be taken with respect to issues other than the, seems to me we're essentially talking about issues other than the period of confinement that's being imposed. Everything else you've been describing is ancillary to that and would be directly appealable. Not how long you're going to stay in prison, not yet in prison. That issue would be appealable regardless of the plea that preceded the commitment to the division, only after the board has, in effect, dealt with that case. Okay. Now, I'm also wondering if it would make sense to provide that those ancillary issues, restitution, procedures leading to sentencing, if those could be preserved until after the board had acted and asserted in a single proceeding, so that we didn't build in the necessity for dual appeals if a defendant were to desire to withhold those questions along with any issues relating to confinement as such and take them all at one time. Would there be any policy reason why we shouldn't let a defendant reserve those
I can't think of any policy reason, and as I indicated, it's my preference that you provide that sentencing gets dealt with in one appeal, and it makes sense that it be done after the set date. The only thing that I would caution is that in drafting language to that effect, the drafter has to be careful not to imply a change in the traditional raise or waive rule. In other words, a defendant who wishes to challenge a procedure at sentencing would be subject to the same existing rules regarding preserving that error.
Yes.
He need only he just wouldn't be required to raise it. In fact, would be prohibited from raising it on direct appeal because that issue comes up at the set date rather than on the appeal of the conviction.
Yeah, no, I'm not intending any change there. Only that if a defendant were to choose, properly preserving otherwise those issues, to wait and assert them in one proceeding post-parole board disposition, such that all the ancillary issues and the issues surrounding the period of confinement itself could be raised at one time. I don't see why we should build in a requirement that there might be, depending on the scope of the issues, two appeals in a case.
Then you're left with the question of what you do with people that are not subject to parole board jurisdiction.
And in that case, my reaction would be we provide the direct appeal.
With respect to the procedural types of issues.
Well, what else? What
restitution is the kinds of issues that we're talking about in restitution, I think, fairly can be characterized as procedural, even though they get close to being substantive.
Well, I think I'd be saying whatever issues would be available to a defendant placed on probation, those would be assertable by direct appeal.
I guess the distinction that I'm trying to draw, Mr. Chairman, is between an appeal where you're claiming that there's some sort of legal error in the sentencing proceeding and the appeal that seems to be allowed under existing statutes where you're just saying we disagree with the judge's decision as to the kind of disposition that is appropriate for me. This is what's referred to by counsel as the statutory excessive sentence claim.
But in that probation, how does that relate to a probation context?
It doesn't really, although the public defender's office has argued that the imposition of 5 years probation is cruel and unusual.
The length of probation?
The length of probation.
Mr. Chair, is your intent in this to enable the defendant to reserve an appeal until after the parole board set, or to require a defendant who is going to be incarcerated to reserve all issues until after a parole board set?
Well, actually, my proposal, my conception was that he wouldn't be required to reserve them, to withhold them until after the parole board, the non-confinement kinds of issues, but that he or she could do so. I suppose we could require that they be withheld, but
Dave Groom, State Public Defender's Office. I guess the only concern that I have is with the previous sections on consecutive sentences and merger, you're creating a set of statutes for that the judges are going to have to interpret, and circuit judges and district judges, with regard to setting a sentence, and then saying that the appellate courts, if I understand what's being done here, that the appellate courts are not going to have a chance to review that judge's particular sentence.
Well, no, it'll be reviewable. It's only a question of when that issue can be raised.
I see. Okay.
Now, since the board could unstack consecutives,
that's right. Yeah.
Overturn a minimum, to some extent, in a sense, moot certain issues that might exist as of the time of the judgment. It seems to me kind of like an exhaustion of remedies notion. You'll wait until after the board has administratively dealt with those and see what issues actually remain dealing with confinement.
Okay.
And then take those issues up.
Mr. Chairman, I think that it's desirable to specifically state that they can challenge the consecutives and minimum sentences, the legality of those on the parole board set. But
that's
I also indicated,
I guess the bill now does, you mean?
Yes.
Yeah.
I think that a parole board's refusal to unstack illegally imposed consecutive sentences is an abuse of discretion as a matter of law. That would be, so you can get at it by saying the parole board erred, or perhaps you would want to say, you could also say, assign as error in the parole board hearing the court's error. That's a fairly technical distinction, but it is the intent, my intent anyway, to provide for review of those kinds of issues, consecutive sentences, minimum sentences, misapplication of the matrix, only from the parole board set. except in the case of those people who are not subject to parole board jurisdiction. That's just as a matter of judicial economy. If you give the defendant the option of raising it on direct appeal, as you point out, there's a chance that the parole board is going to moot that issue, and yet if he can raise it on direct appeal or elect to withhold it until after the parole board, he can raise it on direct appeal and the court may be required to deal with it unnecessarily if the parole board ultimately overrides the consecutives anyway.
Dave, what about this? Are you saying that you're not exactly doing away with guilty plea appeals then, on direct appeal?
The bill as it's presently written does away with guilty plea appeals, but my suggestion is that you delete this language on line 18 of page 20 that would expressly eliminate guilty plea appeals and make it possible for a person who pleads guilty to appeal, but there's a limited number of issues that he could raise.
Well, you know as well as I that they'll all appeal it, so I'm not sure that it would do any good. I mean, give them 4 or 5 months out of the penitentiary, they'll come up with anything. And I'm a little concerned that you're still going to have double appeals, and you're just putting off the sentencing appeal until the parole then.
That's a concern that we have as well, and it may be that, as a practical matter, a defendant who pleads guilty and is told you can appeal your guilty plea, but the only issue you can raise is failure to state reasons, and the judge stated adequate reasons, will say, well, nevertheless, I want to appeal. Frankly, I'm now persuaded that we have to address that problem in a way other than cutting off the potential for meritorious appeals. It may be true that guilty plea appeals are largely frivolous, but that has to be addressed by addressing the responsibility of counsel to raise frivolous issues, what's referred to as the Anders problem, rather than by cutting off appeals because of the possibility that you would be cutting off one good appeal that ought to be raised. And I guess I'm just prepared to live with that.
They say Rome wasn't built in a day. Why don't we see if we can make some progress, and the legislature can look at it in 2 years and see how the system is working. The chair is going to move that the appellate provisions of the bill, the appeal provisions of the bill, will be timely framed to provide that without discrimination based on the type of plea entered or whether or not conviction is based on trial or on a plea, direct appeal will be available for, I'm going to have to just speak conceptually and I will have to refine, but be available for those issues not involving the designation of a period of confinement. So that would include procedural errors in the imposition of the sentence itself, restitution, etc. Issues dealing with period of confinement must await the disposition of the board. The first group of issues can be preserved for appeal with those other issues. Yes, in one appeal post-board. Secondly, I would propose that for those defendants placed on probation, all issues would be subject to direct appeal. Are there any other are there any statuses or groups, situations that we need to address? Those individuals who are committed to the jurisdiction of the division, come within the jurisdiction of the board, and are determined not to be eligible for parole, so they get no set at all. I guess their period of, I guess there'll be a designated point that we can refer to from which the right of appeal will run, the time will be calculated, the board. Does the board enter a formal order determining that such a person is not eligible?
I think they do.
What I'm trying to make sure is we have a benchmark point for those people to set the time within which they must take their post-board appeal with respect to any issues they reserve. Hazel?
Yes.
If the board determines someone is not to receive a parole date, set date, you enter a formal order to that effect?
Yes.
Okay. So that's the key date for that group of people. Anything further?
I have a couple of other issues, but they're not related to status on appeals.
Are they related to appeals?
Yes. I proposed in the June 14th submissions that the parole board set date hearing provision be amended to permit the state to appeal the set date as well as the defendant. And the reason for that was because, as Mr. Groom indicates, there is going to be a new set of issues arising by virtue of the consecutive and merger issue, and I was...
Didn't we reject that before?
I don't recall it being rejected.
At the last meeting, we heard here.
Thought I'd ask.
Should have been here. I didn't reject the bill, but I carry a lot of weight here.
It was a massacre. Next issue.
The other issue, I'm sure the committee hasn't rejected because I haven't raised it, although you may have decided.
Yeah, we rejected that one too. We read your mind.
Current draft provides that the appeal from the parole board set may be taken 60 days, which I believe is in conformity with the APA petition for judicial review. I might suggest that you make it 30 days merely to speed the process along.
Yeah, I think that's a point I wanted to raise also. And that's going to be, that period of time will be the same whether or not the order that triggers it is an order denying a parole date or one that sets it.
Yes.
Either way. Okay, the chair would move with the addition of the 30 versus 60 day period, the chair would move the provisions for the appeal section that I reviewed earlier. Lynn, are you clear on those? Mm-hmm. Mr. Gruber here. Objection? Okay, we have the final section dealing with the handling of the new approach to the people who are presently being, I guess, treated as conditional dischargees. Is there any discussion of that by the committee? Judge Bonebrake, consecutive sentencing.
The concern has been raised, and I'm referring now to page 5, line 19, and this is subsection 4 of section 5, page 5, line 19. Concern's been raised that we should attempt to make it certain there when we're talking about consecutive sentences for, and this is the section that deals with the multiple convictions arising out of the same course of conduct, that the court should impose a sentence on the most serious offense and then look at the lesser offenses to determine whether or not they are incidental violations, in order to determine whether or not a consecutive sentence might be imposed. Bill Gary has had the same concern. There's a reference to that really on page 6, subsection 5. You see, it becomes important if you have a conviction for rape and, say, criminal mischief, if the court imposes a sentence on the criminal mischief, then under this criterion, it arguably could impose a consecutive sentence for the rape because it clearly is not an incidental violation. But if the court sentences for rape, criminal mischief might be.
Yeah.
So okay. It's the order of sentence is important. And that suggested language Bill has agreed to, and I think that it's important to make it clear that the order of sentencing is to sentence for the most serious offense and then look at, then gauge the others under these sections.
Dave, Marty, I assume you have no disagreement with that contention, would you? Let me read the language. In sub 4, it would we'd insert new language that would say, after imposing a term of imprisonment for the most serious offense, and then it goes on with the typed language, the court has discretion to impose consecutive terms of imprisonment for, and then insert other separate convictions arising out of, and then insert the same continuous and uninterrupted course of conduct. Chair would move that amendment.
Mr. Chair, and then goes on only if the court finds?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
I was just looking for the Gary amendments to the merger and second sentence report just to make sure we're using this. Objection? Chair moves that the amendments to 20-3, Chair moves that the -3 amendments to 2087 as amended be added to Senate Bill 713. Is there an objection? Or 731,
that's right.
Is there objection?
No objection.
The Chair moves that Senate Bill 731 as amended be reported with a due pass recommendation.
Mr. Chair, nice job.
Linda, is there a problem?
Well, not a problem, just that we were 731 is that increases the assault from 65 yep. and over, and that stays in
that
the
stays
bill.
That stays in there.
Mr. Chair.
The committee had been considering 2894 along with it.
Well, I have talked with the co-chair of Ways and Means. If the provisions dealing with under 65 are left as they are, the bill does not need to go to Ways and Means. She believes that marginal fiscal impact in dollars is one that the committee can accept. If you add the juveniles, it kicks it well over her borderline and the bill must go down. My recommendation would be that we not do that at this stage of the session. All right. Since this bill will be going to conference anyway for one more look-see by the Senate, I think we need to get moving.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Scudero.
Now, I'm not realizing at this stage what's going to be done in conference committee. On Section 3 of the Senate Bill 731, it seems to me we've already touched upon those issues.
Which ones?
In Section 3 of the current bill, we have...
You mean the periods for PSIs?
No, Section 3 on the original bill.
What question are we raising?
Well, we're adding a person subjects another to sexual contact and the victim is 65 or older and does not consent to the sexual contact. It's a Class C felony. I believe with the bill, if I'm not mistaken, the bill that you're going to be carrying is that we change that a person subjects another to sexual contact if the victim does not consent to the sexual contact. We didn't, and that was a Class C felony.
My memory of that bill is that what we added to sex abuse one is if it's sexual intercourse, deviant sexual intercourse, sexual penetration, and the person does not consent, as opposed to sexual contact and the person does not consent.
Okay. All right.
Further discussion? Call the roll, please.
Yes.
Hill?
Aye.
Lumber?
Aye.
Aye.
Myers? Aye.
Rutherford?
Aye.
Approved. Meeting will be in recess till 1:30.